now with Roe gone, let's be very clear. The health and life of women in this nation are now at risk.
The repercussions and ripple effect of a ruling reversal, a seismic shift for abortion access in the United States. Supreme Court striking down Roe versus Wade, the decision displaying deepening divisions.
Millions and millions of innocent human beings were lost because of the Roe versus Wade decision.
This decision is an outrage. It's illegitimate. Abortion bans are illegitimate.
Doing away with half a century of nationwide protections, a woman's right to choose now a matter for individual states. Laws that are already changing, sweeping ramifications for tens of millions of women across America, and a judgment also being watched closely on this side of the border.
Good evening. Controversial and consequential. The landmark case from 1973 overturned.
New restrictions over reproductive rights coming to effect in some states just moments after the ruling. Our coverage begins with CTV's Washington Bureau Chief Joy Malbin.
Immediate reaction to the high court's decision ending the constitutional right to abortion in place for nearly 50 years.
This is amazing. Probably the best day of American history in my lifetime.
The Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, leaving the decision for states to decide. The president calling it a sad day in America.
The court has done what it has never done before, expressly take away a constitutional right that is so fundamental to so many Americans.
With Roe v. Wade gone, Planned Parenthood says 36 million women will be left without abortion access. Half the states are now expected to ban or severely restrict abortion. Across America, shock has turned to anger.
This ruling was illegitimate. It must not be accepted.
Demonstrators vowing to continue the fight.
For people in the states, you know, the fight is now in your door. You have to stand out on the streets and be ready to argue, be ready to yell.
The decision, unthinkable just a few years ago, made possible by an emboldened conservative court.
It was three justices named by one president, Donald Trump, who are the core of today's decision to upend the scales of justice.
A stunning turn of events, though the country was bracing for this. The ruling comes more than a month after that unprecedented leak of a draft opinion by Justice Samuel Alito. The highest-ranking Republican in the U.S. House of Representatives says the lives of millions of children will be saved.
The court affirmed that the power to protect unborn life is returned to the people and their elected representatives.
The end to federal abortion protections immediately turning to an election issue.
This is deadly serious. A woman's right to choose reproductive freedom is on the ballot in November.
And the shockwaves of this decision extend far beyond the U.S.
What impact could it have here in Canada? The word Toronto even appearing as part of the dissent. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live with more. Scott?
Well, Pauline, to no one's surprise, reaction on this side of the border to the U.S. decision is mixed. There are some who fear that this could spur changes to abortion access here in Canada and others who hope that it will.
It is a landmark decision and one that could have an impact on this side of the border.
I'm beyond outraged and angry and grief-stricken.
Allowing U.S. states to create their own laws when it comes to abortion could make Canada an option for some who are unable to get one at home. It's something recognized by the judges who opposed the ruling, who wrote in their dissent, the challenge for a woman will be to finance a trip, not to New York or California, but to Toronto.
What I worry about is who was able to even make that journey. When you get here, you're having to pay about $500 out of pocket to access that. The Canadian government has said that we will open our doors for that, and that is good.
Today, the Prime Minister called news of the U.S. decision horrific.
Let me be really, really clear. In Canada, we will always defend women's rights to choose and continue to work to expand access to the full range of reproductive and health and services across the country.
Pro-life supporters in Canada say they are elated with the news and hope it may lead to change here.
The majority of Canadians, I think, actually oppose this status quo, and they will be looking for pro-life policies to at least restrict abortion. And of course, our goal would be to ban it completely.
At the very least, some hope today's decision south of the border will spur a conversation about the issue here at home.
It's too big an issue to not talk about. I think we have to examine our position. I think the news from the states forces us to ask ourselves, why do I believe what I believe? So I think it really does start with again, just talking about that issue.
And it would likely be a conversation had by Canadian politicians of all stripes. It was a Canadian Supreme Court decision back in 1988 that decriminalized abortion in this country. Reporting live, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Scott. And CTV's Joy Malbon joins us now live from Washington. Joy, how are people reacting to this landmark decision?
You know, I think a lot of people were bracing in this nation for what was to come because of this leaked draft memo, an opinion from a conservative justice called Samuel Alito. And in it, he said that there's nothing in the Constitution that guarantees a right to abortion. And he suggested that it should be overruled. Now, we have a conservative majority court now. Donald Trump appointed three of the conservative justices. And people were bracing for it, but the immediate impact, it was like a gut punch through a lot of the protesters and demonstrators who showed up today who are pro-abortion. Speaking with them, they spoke about who would be affected by this. Poor people, women of color, people who don't have money to travel to another state to get abortion access. They were angry and outraged that a right that women have had in this country for nearly 50 years was suddenly taken away from them. On the other side, there was celebration because for nearly 50 years, religious groups, conservative groups have put a lot of money towards fighting abortion access, and they're thrilled with the result today.
Can this decision be challenged?
That's a very good question. Certainly, the president said, look, I cannot write an executive order and suddenly make this law of the land again. They tried to what they call codify abortion access rights in federal law in the Senate, but they don't have the votes. So what Joe Biden and the Democratic Party are suggesting is to vote. Make this a ballot box issue. And if you want change in this country, vote straight state legislatures and vote in city councils and vote for people that are pro-abortion.
All right. CTV's Joy Malbon in Washington. Thank you.
Thanks.
Straight ahead, drivers think twice before parking downtown, facing stiff penalties for blocking traffic as police prepare to launch a crackdown to keep Toronto moving.
But first, you're looking at some of the most powerful people in the province today, and many of them are probably familiar to you. Premier Doug Ford unveiling his cabinet today at an outdoor swearing-in ceremony at Queen's Park. There is a mixture of returning faces and new ones taking high-profile positions in government.
First comes the pomp and pageantry, then comes the politics and policy. CTV's Queen's Park reporter Siobhan Morris is live with more. Siobhan.
Well, Nathan, we heard the premier talk a lot today about unity, about jobs, about building prosperity, and he's presenting the team that he thinks can get it done, in his words.
With lots of pomp and pageantry, Doug Ford took the wraps off his new, slightly bigger inner circle.
I do swear.
This cabinet has some fresh blood, but leans hard on experience and continuity with one major change.
I, Sylvia Jones, swear that I will duly and faithfully.
Jones, who was Solicitor General in the last government, becomes Minister of Health and Deputy Premier. The veteran MPP played a key role in the COVID-19 vaccine rollout
and emergency measures through the pandemic.
I'm honestly very energized, very excited, and honored to keep going.
Stephen Lecce is back as education minister. He says with early talks about new contracts for education workers underway, the government's goal is unchanged.
A good outcome for students that puts them at the center of our deals, where we're able to keep them in school full-time with a normal experience.
Also returning are Peter Bethlen Falvey as Minister of Finance, Caroline Mulroney in Transportation, and Steve Clark at Municipal Affairs and Housing. Monty McNaughton is back with Labor with an extra focus on immigration.
340,000 jobs are going unfilled, so the focus is on training people for these jobs that exist and attracting talent from around the world to Ontario.
Like on election night, the Premier's message on this day was one of unity.
We're ready to unite behind a positive vision, ready to unite behind a plan for the future of Ontario.
The opposition doesn't think this cabinet sends the right message.
A message of status quo, and I'm not sure the people of Ontario want the status quo. They're suffering right now with inflation.
The Premier did raise some eyebrows with one cabinet post. Michael Ford, the Premier's nephew, is Ontario's new Minister of Citizenship and Multiculturalism.
There are plenty of people, people of color, in Ford's caucus that could take that position, and he chose to appoint his nephew.
The Premier defended the appointment.
10 years of political experience.
Michael Ford has 8 combined years as a school board trustee and Toronto City Councillor. Also new around the cabinet table, George Peary, who scored a historic win for the PCs in Timmins. He's Minister of Mines. Former CFL player Neil Lumsden is in the game as Minister of Tourism, Culture and Sport. And Charmaine Williams becomes Associate Minister of Women's Social and Economic Opportunity, looking to make their mark as they learn the ropes at their new place of work.
Now, absent from the cabinet this time was Lisa McLeod, the longtime MPP for Ottawa. The Premier said that he thinks she's a great person. There is a history here, though. There was some feeling that Lisa McLeod had bungled the autism file when she was in charge of that. More recently, she was in charge of tourism. She says she's taking some time off this summer. Reporting live, I'm Siobhan Morris. Pauline, back to you.
Thanks, Siobhan. And if you'd like to see a full list of the people making up the provincial cabinet, you can find that on our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca.
To a party of a different kind now, and one so many people have been waiting a long time for. The CTV News Shoppers live above the Village tonight on the start of Pride Weekend in Toronto. In-person events and performances are back after a couple of years of pandemic closures.
And you can bet the streets will be packed. CTV's Andrew Brennan is live with more. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Pauline. And yes, things are getting started. In a couple of minutes, one of the major shows, a headliner show from Spice, the Queen of Dance Hall, as she's called, is going to be happening at Yonge and Dundas down there. And there's also the Trans March tonight taking place steps from where I am right now and speaking to people, whether from near, far, wherever they're from. This is something that's been so long awaited and something that's going to be savored for the weekend.
After the storm comes the rainbow, and after 3 years come the return of rainbow flags painting Yonge Street.
We're back. We're finally saying happy Pride in person and able to embrace each other.
The director of Toronto Pride says this year is set to be bigger and better than ever before, with up to 2 million people expected, among them Impact Wrestling star Giselle Shaw, who today revealed to the world she is trans.
I just get to truly live my life freely and authentic and not have to hide who I am and just be proud of myself and everyone else is here.
Others came from Vancouver, Montreal, New York to be here.
It's been 2 years, so looking forward to it.
Pride organizers say there has been an increase in security risks in recent weeks. South of the border, U.S. police have reported threats at several Pride events across the country, including in Idaho, where 31 masked men were found packed in a van and accused of conspiracy to riot. Americans that came north for the weekend say there is a sense of security at Pride in Canada.
Honestly, I do feel safer here. You know, we have a lot going back on back home.
And for the locals, a chance to find, grow, and celebrate their community.
Actually showing up and being around everybody and feeling included and not ostracized or anything like that.
After 3 years, there's a lot to be prideful of. Now, the security presence is not altogether that large for just being here on Church Street. For some of the major events, like I was mentioning before, at Yonge and Dundas Square, for the show tonight and for other events outside of the parades, those are something to bear in mind, that there will be security wands for anyone that would that could be looking to come in. But speaking to people here, security is not a major concern. They feel quite safe, and they are ready to celebrate and show their pride. Reporting live, I'm Andrew Brennan. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thanks, Andrew. Justin, time is shaping up to be a beautiful weekend. Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions. Michelle.
Well, Nathan, it is definitely going to be a sunny weekend for at least some of the weekend. Definitely a hot one. We have a heat warning that is now in effect for the city of Toronto, for Halton, Peel, specifically Brampton and Mississauga, and also for the Windsor area. So we're looking at temperatures getting into the low 30s, Humidex in the mid to high 30s. So something to keep in mind when you're making your weekend plans. We got close to that today. 28 degrees was the warmest we got in the city of Toronto. That's where we're sitting at Pearson right now. Abundant sunshine. Humidex values starting to get up there. Not too bad today. 18 degrees and clear overnight. Back to you, Pauline.
Thanks so much, Michelle. If you've spent any time in traffic recently, you know levels look a lot like they did before the pandemic, if not worse.
Plans now in place to deal with the growing gridlock. CTV's Janice Golding reports.
Can you get out of the bike lane, please?
Parking enforcement officer Aaron Urquhart shows us just what's causing gridlock in our city.
Stopping in the live lane of traffic to pick people up, well, at least they didn't park in the bike lane.
With traffic levels now back to 90 to 95% of pre-pandemic levels. When people disobey traffic signals or park illegally, it causes major congestion.
Even if you are stopped for 2 minutes, that 2 minutes can cause massive gridlock in downtown Toronto.
That's why the city has launched the Keep Toronto Moving traffic campaign. Dedicated patrols will be focusing on improving traffic flow and reducing congestion, which will include targeting vehicles blocking intersections and not complying with traffic signals.
Traffic is back, and that means that rush hour enforcement has to come back in order to help keep Toronto moving.
Vehicles caught blocking intersections could face a $125 fine. And starting on Monday, regular rush hour parking enforcement resumes, meaning if you're caught stopped on a rush hour route, you could get a $150 ticket.
Many people are now parking at random in rush hour routes, blocking these lanes for other traffic. And we believe enforcement will get people back to following the rules.
I guess if it helps, it helps. What are you going to do if people leave their cars everywhere?
I don't think it's a bad thing to do. I think people drive like maniacs downtown anyway, and I think the city should take responsibility.
The question is enforcement alone enough?
Enforcement is necessary, but not enough. It's not sufficient.
U of T engineering professor Bahar Abdulhai says we will continue to have congestion as long as demand exceeds road capacity. A lack of space means new roads aren't an option. So Abdulhai has alternative recommendations, like managing supply and demand. For example, making traffic lights smarter and more efficient, implementing time-dependent congestion tolling in certain areas, and the creation of an online trip reservation system, meaning you can't travel unless you have a reservation for a time slot and route.
So if you want to fly somewhere, you have to make a reservation for a flight. And when the plane is full, then you cannot travel anymore. So we treat the road system exactly the same.
Abdulhai also recommends transit, ride-sharing, and telecommuting to avoid an increase of this.
It's like these cars shouldn't even be entering this intersection right now if it's already blocked.
So far this year, 23 people have been killed in collisions in Toronto, including 15 pedestrians. The Keep Toronto Moving campaign runs through to next week, Thursday. Janice Golding, CTV News.
Next, the CTV News investigates, and we're learning rush hour parking isn't the only traffic rule Toronto police are eyeing.
The other, looking at using new technology to enforce time limits. CTV's John Woodward is live with more. John?
Pauline, unless you have a resident permit, the amount of time you're allowed to park on streets like these is limited. But it can be a hard rule to enforce depending on what time of day it is, something one Toronto resident calls a loophole.
I see a vehicle that's going to be here for more than 8 hours because...
Rennie Johnson is a one-man parking vigilante. His day job working for TSN, which, like CTV News, is a division of Bell Media, and otherwise walking the streets of his St. Clair Village neighborhood to blow the whistle on parking scofflaws.
Yeah, so this one's fine. This one's good. The street has been quiet, but now it's ramping up.
Ramping up, he says, as the pandemic winds down. Sometimes he gets results. That's a $30 ticket on this dash. Over hundreds of complaints, he's noticed a pattern when it comes to complaining about a car overstaying its welcome.
There's the loophole. You have to do it at a certain time.
If he calls later than 10 a.m., no one seems to get a ticket for staying longer than the maximum 3 hours.
There's not a lot of permit parking spots on the street, and so to have people without permits park for more than 8 hours, not being enforced, is unacceptable.
Toronto's police honest that there is a gap. They chalk a tire by hand to prove someone hasn't moved their car. The same officer has to chalk it and check it again after 3 hours. If a different officer comes by after a shift change, it's back to square one. Toronto police say they're looking at technology that could bridge the gap. License plate scanners that already exist in other cities. They'd scan a license plate into a database, information that any officer could access to write a ticket. Loophole closed.
So it's picking up the vehicles?
Every beep?
Yeah.
No timelines yet. It could be a stepping stone to other technology that could have drivers pay digitally in advance for some neighborhoods and avoid tickets at all.
It's a conceptual discussion trying to improve the system and the experience for people coming in and out of the city of Toronto.
Until then, some drivers are taking advantage. We wanted to see what was driving some people to park in the neighborhood. The man with the blue van, another resident.
What happened?
I parked it over here and I forgot overnight, that's all.
And this woman, who we're not showing, she says she works nearby for minimum wage and just can't afford to pay.
I move my car every so often.
For Johnson, it comes down to the rules that assign these spots to neighborhood parkers.
It bothers a lot of people who come home from work and see that, you know, I have to go up another block.
He says those who don't want to pay for parking can always take public transit.
Now, a big caveat on this new technology. Some of the cities have implemented it, including the license plate scanner technology, have seen their revenues surge. So if Toronto brings something like that here, they could close that loophole, but you may be opening your wallet. Reporting live from the East End, I'm John Woodward. Pauline, back to you.
Thanks, John. And we want to hear from you. If there are stories you want us to look into, here are some ways to reach us. You can call 416-384-6397 or send an email to investigate@ctv.ca. You can also visit our website for other secure and anonymous options. That's at ctvnewstoronto.ca/investigates.
A school bus driver in Peel Region is facing drunk driving charges after a collision with another vehicle yesterday in Brampton. It happened near Countryside and Coltrane Drive. Several children were on the bus at the time. A 61-year-old woman from Brampton is charged with 2 counts of operation while impaired. No injuries were reported.
Toronto police have identified a suspect in a deadly shooting outside a subway station last week. On the night of June 15th, 28-year-old Kayan Hosseini was fatally shot near Shepherd subway station. Today, police issued a Canada-wide warrant for 30-year-old Kiarash Parzam of Richmond Hill. He is wanted for first-degree murder. And they're also searching for a silver 2014 Hyundai Tucson connected to the case with Ontario license plates CVBA460.
Meanwhile, Peel police have identified the victim in a fatal shooting in the Mississauga Co-op complex. It happened Wednesday night near Glen Aaron Drive and Britannia Road. 45-year-old Rohan Bennett from Mississauga died at the scene. Investigators say they don't have any suspect description, but believe this was a targeted shooting.
In the U.S., a compromise bill on curbing gun violence is one major step closer to becoming law.
It doesn't do everything I want. But what we are doing will save thousands of lives.
The legislation was passed by the House of Representatives today. All Democrats voted for the bill, along with 14 Republicans. It includes some movement on background checks and funding to states that administer red flag laws. The legislation follows recent mass shootings in Buffalo and Uvalde, Texas. The Senate approved the bill last night. U.S. President Joe Biden is now expected to sign it into law.
You can't make that. Ukraine's preparing to withdraw its troops from a city in the east. The regional governor says the soldiers are being redeployed from Severodonetsk after weeks of street fighting and bombardment. He says there's no sense staying to defend positions that are already destroyed. Russia launched its invasion of Ukraine 4 months ago today. The Commonwealth Leaders Summit began in Rwanda today, with the British monarchy seeing a unified future.
But the absence of some key leaders is casting doubt on the Commonwealth's relevancy. CTV's Kevin Gallagher reports.
The Commonwealth Summit's goal is to create a vibrant future for its 54 members. Before this can happen, though, Prince Charles admits the dark legacy of British colonialism and slavery needs to be acknowledged.
Many of those wrongs belong to an earlier age with different and, in some ways, lesser values.
The heir to Britain's throne used reconciliation with Indigenous peoples as an example for a path forward.
As challenging as that conversation can be, people across Canada are approaching it with courage and unwavering commitment.
Though commitment in the monarchy seems to be waning. In November, Barbados removed Queen Elizabeth as its head of state, with Jamaica and even Australia veering towards becoming republics.
I can't talk for other countries, but what I can tell you, it is important for Canada to be part of the Commonwealth and to be at that table.
Nearly half of the Commonwealth's members chose not to send their head of government to this leaders' summit, including India, Pakistan, South Africa, New Zealand, and Australia, a hit to the organization's clout.
To President Kagame, a close friend and a partner, I know that he shares my boundless optimism about the future of the Commonwealth.
Human rights groups are disappointed Commonwealth members have shied away from denouncing Rwanda for allegations its government jails and tortures political opponents. President Paul Kagame denies the allegations. A day late, Trudeau met with Rwanda's leader under pressure to speak out against the repressive allegations.
Pleasure to sit down with you.
Officials close to the Prime Minister say Trudeau raised the importance of respecting human rights in his meeting with President Kagame. Kevin Gallagher, CTV News. Kigali.
Many Canadians are struggling right now. Soaring inflation and rising prices for just about everything continue to have a significant impact.
For a look at how people are managing, here's some results from a new Angus Reid poll. The survey asked, are you better or worse off than a year ago? Nearly half said they believe they were worse off, and that's the highest such figure for an Angus Reid survey in 12 years. More than a third said they're in the same position they were a year ago, and that's a drop of 8% from the first quarter of 2022.
When it comes to feeding the family, more than half of respondents characterized it as difficult or very difficult. 46% said easy or very easy. Last October, 45% said putting food on the table was hard, while 52% said it wasn't an issue.
When asked what changes they made to their driving habits to save money, more than half of respondents said they'd stop going somewhere because of the cost. More than a third said they've shopped around for cheaper gas. And one in five use an alternate form of transportation.
And with regard to interest rates, one in five respondents said they've already seen their mortgage payments increase. More than half said they expect to be affected in the near future.
The Prime Minister is on a 10-day trip overseas, but many issues are being raised here. To talk more about this, it's time for Overview with Evan Solomon. Evan, Trudeau commenting on several major issues, including abortion.
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court, to no one's surprise, but to many people's shock, has overturned Roe v. Wade, which is, of course, the constitutional protection for a United States and American woman's right to access abortion. The question is, could this happen in Canada? And the answer is, it took 50 years in the U.S. to roll back rights. And it could happen here because there's many people here on the same fight. Now, it's a different arena. And the Trudeau government has long promised that they were going to make sure that all women have access to abortion. The truth is, Nathan, across this country, in many provinces, access to abortion is a huge issue. And they don't have it. And under the Canada Health Act, they have the right to have it. So there's pressure on the Trudeau government to actually enforce the Canada Health Act to ensure access. But this is a big fight, and this will play out in the conservative leadership race, where social conservatives have talked a lot about abortion issues. So while we see this going on in the United States, it's an issue here in Canada. And one last thing, I spoke to the retired Supreme Court Justice Rosie Abella today, and she said to me, this is a tragedy. And she said, rolling back rights of human beings like women in the United States, she said, and I'm using her words, is a perversion of justice. That's the former Supreme Court Justice, Rosie Abella.
Also, Evan, as Parliament goes on summer break, what are the biggest concerns for the Trudeau government?
They're facing a crisis of competence, Nathan, both in governance and in politics. In governance, long line at passport offices. Why can't that get done? That's a question of competence. Look at Toronto Pearson Airport. That's a question of competence. But there's also political competence. Was there an allegation of political interference into the investigation into the largest mass murder in Canadian history, the 2020 massacre of 22 Canadians in Nova Scotia? New documents show that a police superintendent alleges in his handwritten notes that the commissioner of the RCMP said that she had promised the Prime Minister's office and the Minister of Public Safety that he would release the perpetrator's weapon. He said that would jeopardize the investigation. So there's real questions now of competence, of political interference. So they entered the summer with inflation at 7.7%, long lineups, and questions about ministerial interference. That, my friend, is a long, hot summer.
All right. Thank you, Evan. And a reminder to join Evan on Sunday for CTV's Question Period and weeknights for Power Play on CTV News Channel.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up, it's Feedback Friday. More viewers find out they have liens on their homes because of rental contracts. More families say they're stuck, hoping their passports will arrive on time. And more shoppers notice that some products are shrinking, but their prices are staying the same. Feedback Friday is just ahead.
A heat warning is in effect for Toronto, Brampton, and Mississauga. It's going to be a hot weekend, and humidity is building. 31 degrees and sunny for Saturday, feeling like 34. The UV index will be a 9. For Sunday, 29, feeling like 36. Building heat, humidity, and instability. Chance of thunderstorms. I'll have your full forecast coming up. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Many families have been waiting anxiously for months, hoping their new passports will arrive in time for their summer holidays.
Some homeowners have been shocked to find out they may have liens on their property because they signed door-to-door rental contracts. Here's Pat Foran with Feedback Friday. Pat.
Thanks, Nathan and Pauline. Many people who have signed contracts to rent furnaces, air conditioners, and water heaters may not know they have a lien on their home. After our story, many were shocked to find out, despite paying rental fees for years, they could have to pay off a lien, too.
There's contracts from a number of different companies, all with different names.
Shirley Coltis found out after her brother died he had signed multiple contracts to rent 6 different items, including a furnace and water softener. There were 4 liens on his home for more than $36,000.
It's absolutely outrageous that they're allowed to do that.
Liens can be placed on your property without your knowledge.
The Ontario government needs to close this loophole.
Keisha told us, my mom was a victim of door-to-door scammers. She has 7 liens on her property that total more than $50,000. Gary Berger and Gloria Booth rented the same water heater for 28 years. When they added up the cost, they paid over $4,000 in rental fees, and it never once required servicing.
A rental just keeps on going and going and going.
Mila wrote, I've been paying $38 a month for 20 years to rent a water heater. After your story, I bought one for $800 plus installation. Thanks for the info. Inflation is leading to higher prices at the grocery store, but it's also causing shrinkflation. Tom sent in this photo of 2 tubs of margarine. One is 680 grams, the other 637. Tom said, old container on left, new one on right, obvious weight difference, and it was the same price. Many people have been lining up frustrated as they try to get their passports renewed. It's led to massive delays. Barbara Brooks had been waiting for almost 3 months to get her son's passport.
When you call, you just get a recorded message and it says, all our lines are busy, and they just hang up on you.
With CTV's help, she got it on time, but Debbie wrote, I applied in person April 25th and have yet to receive my passport. I've asked for a status update and they won't respond. And we asked Service Canada for an update, and they said the situation has improved slightly, but they're still dealing with a major backlog. They say no one should book a trip that requires a passport until you have it in hand. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Well, we're at the start of the first full weekend of summer, and GO Transit is putting some service upgrades into effect. Starting tomorrow, customers can ride GO buses to Canada's Wonderland in Vaughan, St. Jacob's Market in Waterloo, and Toronto Premium Outlets in Halton Hills. Full schedule details are available on the GO Transit website.
And the City of Toronto is opening 55 more public pools tomorrow. It follows the early opening of 10 outdoor pools last week and splash and spray pads in May. Reservations are not needed this year, but officials say it's always a good idea to check each location's hours in advance. Swimming, one of many things to do this weekend.
Absolutely, but we're all looking towards Sunday when the big parade might get hit by water of a different kind.
Well, yeah, we do have the potential for seeing some showers and storms as we get into Sunday. We've got building heat, building humidity, and building instability as we get into Sunday, I would say. So we're under a heat warning now in the City of Toronto, Mississauga, and Brampton. So whatever you're doing, if you're going to be outside for any length of time, you definitely want to plan to stay cool and stay hydrated, and you're going to need that SPF as well. But we'll take a look at Sunday's forecast for you. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So we're now sitting at 28 degrees in the City of Toronto. We had a little bit of a lift in humidity around 1, 2 o'clock, where we got up to, I would say, a Humidex reading of 33, 34 at Pearson Airport. It was a little less downtown, but we're starting to see a bit of a shift in the air mass. Of course, just days ago, we had Humidex values getting to around 44 and temperatures to 35. We're not going to be that hot this weekend, but it will be hot. And again, as we look ahead to Sunday, that's when the concern is in terms of timing of showers or storms. It could just be a few millimeters of rain, but if we get some thunderstorms, it could be a little bit more than that. And we're starting to see that temperature lift as we get through the overnight period. 18 is our forecast low for tonight. Seasonal would be 15. That's where we were the last couple of nights. So it's a little bit warmer and even hotter as we get into tomorrow. So here's a look at the highs throughout the region tomorrow. We're starting to see those Humidex values really get up there. And that's why we have that warning that is in effect. So 31 degrees in the City of Toronto, feeling like 34 tomorrow. So what we're looking at throughout the region, especially in the GTA like Toronto, Mississauga, Brampton and over towards Windsor, is those values just starting to inch up into territory that you really want to plan ahead and make sure you have possibilities for staying cool and staying hydrated for. So what we're looking at is surface high pressure system off to the west of us. We've got that sunshine in place for tomorrow. Tomorrow is definitely the better day of the weekend weather-wise, and humidity is on the rise as we get in towards Sunday. So pausing tomorrow at 10 a.m., clear skies, lots of sunshine. At 5 o'clock, we're still looking that way. A little bit of increase in cloud cover as we get through the overnight period, and then we do start to get the potential of showers moving in or some pop-up thunderstorms that could be with us into the evening. So tomorrow, that's when you've got that sunshine. It's a great day to be outdoors. Just looking at the 7-day forecast, 31 degrees for tomorrow, 29 feeling like 36, chance of showers and storms for Sunday, and behind that, cooling down to 20 and then moderating as we get later into the week. Stay with us here on CTV Toronto. More news and weather for you after the break.
While COVID-19 variants have escaped some of the protection offered by vaccines, experts say they've been crucial in preventing more serious outcomes from the virus.
Now, a new study out of the UK is putting a number on just how many lives were saved by the shots. Researchers at Imperial College London say nearly 20 million deaths were prevented in the first year COVID-19 vaccines were available. The figure is based on estimates of how many more deaths than usual were reported during that time period. The authors say more lives might have been saved if low-income countries had received more doses faster. Still, they say the global effort prevented a catastrophic outcome that could have played out if the vaccines did not exist.
Scientists in Switzerland are sharing what they're calling an accidental discovery that could change how breast cancer is diagnosed and treated. Researchers analyzed 30 female cancer patients as well as mice. They found that tumors generate more cancer cells that are also dividing more quickly when affected people are asleep. The authors say the next step is determining if cancer therapies work better at different times of the day. They also suggest oncologists record the times at which they perform biopsies to make data more comparable.
A Hamilton elementary school is facing questions after it canceled plans to show students Pixar's latest movie release, Lightyear. The animated film includes a brief kiss between a lesbian couple, which led to screening bans in some countries. You can find full details on what unfolded at the school on our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Charlie Puth is out with a new duet that's getting a lot of attention from K-pop fans. The singer released his song Left and Right. It's a collaboration with BTS member Jungkook. The pop tune has racked up 11 million views on YouTube since it dropped at midnight. The song was released soon after BTS announced its members would focus more on solo projects. And this isn't the only new music to talk about.
And you didn't see me here. No, they never did see me here.
Taylor Swift released her song Carolina overnight. It's set to be the theme song for an upcoming drama mystery movie called Where the Crawdads Sing. Swift says the song is about living on the outside and looking in. The singer tweeted she wrote Carolina in the middle of the night and worked to make it sound authentic for the story, hoping the world would someday hear it.
A high-profile movie about Elvis Presley's now in theaters and is expected to make that to be a frontrunner at the weekend box office.
Are you ready to fly?
I'm ready. Ready to fly.
Baz Luhrmann's Elvis brought in $4.5 million in Thursday previews. Variety reports it's on track for a $38 million debut. It'll face off against thriller film The Black Phone, but competition will be stiff as earlier releases like Top Gun Maverick, Lightyear, and Jurassic World Dominion also compete for moviegoers.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
Organize, don't agonize, organize. We are the majority.
Updating our top stories, abortion rights activists are calling for action after the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade. The decades-old decision had established a federal right to abortion. The court's conservative majority declared that ruling invalid, meaning states can now enact total bans on the procedure.
We're ready to unite behind a positive vision.
Premier Doug Ford setting the tone for his second term in office today as he named his new cabinet. Sylvia Jones takes over as Deputy Premier and Minister of Health, while some other portfolios didn't change hands. The opposition said the cabinet maintains the status quo when Ontarians are in need of change.
We're finally saying happy Pride in person.
And after several years of pandemic disruptions, the Toronto Pride Parade takes place this weekend. As organizers say, they're keeping an eye on potential security risks. Up to 2 million people are expected to attend the festivities.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up 52 basis points to 77.54 U.S. American benchmark oil was up 3.35 a barrel to 107.62. And the TSX Composite Index gained 345 points to close at 19,062.
Tonight we'll look at the rupture over reproductive rights after a monumental ruling in America.
I'm furious. I'm so angry.
The reaction from both sides as the U.S. Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. That's later on CTV National News.
Toronto is one of the most vibrant, diverse, and interesting cities on the planet. We're a world leader in many areas like business, finance, technology, entertainment, and culture.
Each week, Things to Know TO shines a spotlight on a wide variety of local businesses, services, events, and initiatives from across the GTA that are working to make our city even greater.
And one of the world's best places to live, work, and play. Join us Saturday mornings for Things to Know TO.
The NHL is getting into the NFT market. NFT, short for non-fungible tokens, are basically one-of-a-kind digital images. The NHL says it's working with an online marketplace called Sweet to launch its own NFT offerings. The company says they will consist of video highlights from major moments in hockey history, past and present. Several other sports leagues have already announced their own NFT offerings.
The Stanley Cup will be in the building tonight when the Colorado when Colorado hosts game five of the final. The Avs can capture their first championship in 21 years with a victory. Colorado is up 3-1, making this a must-win for Tampa. The Lightning are looking to three-peat as champions. Only one other team in the NHL history has come back from such a deficit in the final, the 1942 Toronto Maple Leafs.
It's only the second time ever two Canadians have gone in the top 10 in the NBA draft.
Basically, my two-way ability, offense and defense. You know, I feel like I have a chip on my shoulder every time I play. So, I mean, just bringing myself to the team and bring winning.
20-year-old Benedict Mathurin from Montreal was selected sixth by the Indiana Pacers last night. The 6'6" guard forward started at the University of Arizona. Moments later, Shaedon Sharpe was taken seventh by the Portland Trail Blazers. The 19-year-old from London chose not to play college ball. His last significant 5-on-5 game was in high school back in October. And the Raptors drafted Christian Koloko with their only pick in the draft. The 7-foot-1 center was chosen 33rd overall. He played at the University of Arizona last season and was ranked 14th in American collegiate play. Koloko is from the same town in Cameroon as Raptors forward Pascal Siakam. Hopefully he does well.
Mm-hmm. And let's go over to Michelle now for a final word on the weather.
Well, we are under a heat warning here in the city of Toronto, in Brampton and Mississauga. So hot and humid this weekend. And what we're looking at is temperatures, you know, getting in and around the 30-degree mark. Right now, we're sitting at 28 in the city of Toronto. That's the warmest that we've gotten all week, all day. But Humidex did get above 30. Here's a look at the warnings that are in place. So that's right through the weekend. Hot, humid weather. Tomorrow, probably the better day. 31 feeling like 34, lots of sunshine. 29 feeling like 36 with the chance of showers and thunderstorms on Sunday. Of course, Pride Parade is that day. And a reminder, tonight's Lotto Max jackpot is an estimated $65 million plus 10 Max Millions.
All right, thanks, Michelle. Be sure to join us later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
In the meantime, you can stay up to date by going to our website and watch breaking news all day on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.